Blog Talk Radio.
Radio with Chris Taylor and now Amy Dawson. I'd like to start out talking about what tonight's radio show will be about. Tonight's radio show is going to be about The Ridge by Eleanor Toombs. I'd like to start out by introducing our new host, Amy Dawson. Hello, Amy.
Hello.
Would you like to introduce yourself to our audience?
Yes, my name is Amy Dawson, and I am a resident of New Orleans.
Very good. All right, now let's start the show. First off, Eleanor, what made you? Let's just go into it. Like, what is The Ridge, and why did you want to write this book?
Well, I had so many answers to this question earlier. actually, it's been a series of, like, lifelong understanding and learning and everything. Since I was, like, 14, I loved vampires, and Interview with the Vampire came out, and I was just hooked. So just went through my life and was drawn to the darker sides of, you know, movies and plot lines and stuff like that. And it really wasn't, oh, let's sit down and write a book. It was an accumulation through time.
So now, Amy, into this particular question, did you have anything to add to it?
Well, I was going to, I've actually wondered, what is your writing process, Eleanor? What is my writing process?
Yeah.
From, like, the beginning, before it even becomes a book or anything like that, or just from, you know, scratch?
Just anything.
Well, it started out, I was actually talking to a few people, and they had asked me to, you know, write a short story. And, you know, short story was fine. I went to sit down and write a short story about some girl that was mad at the world. And thought had come to me, well, I like vampires so much. Well, why don't we just make her this mean vampire that goes around and just killed a whole bunch of people. So I sat down and went to write it. But then it was, okay, well, she has to meet this person and that person. And then that person actually, you know, came forward with a name. And then that person had a personality and it's things that it would do and what it wouldn't do. And just the character development started to develop, and I started to get to know these characters, individuals, and it just became, instead of maybe one or two pages of, you know, angry writing, it became a book. So I said, well, why don't I publish it? I can't be the only person out there that has angry moments or sad moments or, you know, the whole emotions.
What is your connection to vampires, Eleanor? And what made you, and how did that influence this book?
My connection to vampires, wow. A connection on so many different levels. I guess when I was a little girl, you look at vampires and you see that they are strong and they have no weaknesses and they can defend themselves and nobody can harm them and, you know, kind of like a superhero. And then as you grow older, then you understand the love aspect and the emotions that are attached, and you just go through, I just went through my life just absolutely wanting to, if anybody has read or seen the movies, Interview with the Vampire, Lestat was my favorite. He had his understanding of, you know, from his book, he said, you are what you are. Do what it is in your nature to do. And I love that aspect, to not hide behind, you know, facades and stuff. You are what you are. Why apologize for what you are, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent? So it just, I just fell in love with them and just always have.
Yes. Now, on that note, would you say that vampires are, when you said superheroes, do you think they are, what does the symbol of a vampire represent to you?
Well, I said when you were younger, when I was in my teen years, they were superheroes. Now I don't see them so much as superheroes. actually, what they represent for me is, wow, that's a tough one. It's a whole world hidden underneath another world that most people don't get to see, are afraid to look at. I mean, I don't quite know how to answer that question.
Yes, no. Going back to your book, did you, well, most of the questions I had written down are basically what you just answered in your first two questions. When did you decide to write the book?
I decided to write it about a year, 2 years ago, pardon me, about 2 years ago.
Okay. I'm going to have to change that
was...
on. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I want to know,
what
inspires you? Like, when you're in your day-to-day life, do you see things that you automatically will want to put down on paper, or you'll see a situation that, do you do that? Do you go out and just see situations that you want to write? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I have just relocated. I was living in the South, and that's where the book takes place, because I would look out my window, and I would see a bird, and the way it moved, and the way the sun caressed its feathers, it would just strike me. I mean, in the book, I wrote an area where Ivy, the main character, is standing at her back door. She's outside. I was standing by my back door, and the inspiration came from watching this garden spider spin its web. And it's in the book. Just the delicacy, the just anything will inspire me. Something as simple as standing in a parking lot where everyone is rushing to and fro doing what they're doing in their, you know, everyday life. And if you look down by your feet, you'll see a puddle of water. And in this puddle of water, you will see oil from a car or whatnot. And the way the rainbows will twirl in this puddle, it's just something simple like that will inspire me to do some sort of writing or put it in my book somewhere.
Hmm. Yes. Now, you like different... Now, do symbols play a role in your life? Do you like a rain or a flower or something like that? Does that play a role in your do certain things mean certain things to you when you write books?
Do certain things mean something to me when I write a book?
Yeah. Yeah. Does like a flower represent something to you, or do you have a meaning in an object when you write your books?
Oh, like a hidden meanings or things like that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
No, I don't. Everything is, I like to, like if you go through my book from cover to cover, I like to have the reader, when they're finished reading, once they know all the secrets that are going to be revealed in that book, to actually go back to the beginning of the book and read it again. And like in the first chapter, after you find out certain things in this book, you will go, oh, that's what that is. I do those types of hidden things, like throughout the book, things you won't know because you're in a certain POV, point of view. Then when you go back, you actually know everything that the book has revealed. That's my favorite part of writing.
I have
That's really great.
How do you think that your vampires and other supernatural creatures hold up to previous stories or tellings of a supernatural life?
Excuse me. I actually remember going through with all the vampires, and every one of the vampires that you hear in books and movies, they all have their things. Some have the reptilian-like skin in Twilight, and then you have the, you know, ones like Nosferatu that absolutely were just emaciated. You know, everyone has their own little things. And with me, I try to put into my book, I try to make it as close to Mother Nature as possible. Like, I have always, I don't want to give too many things away, but I'll go ahead and do this. In my book, vampires have power over their entire body. If they want to run really fast, then they make their muscles move really fast and they run. Well, I've always thought what you're doing is vampires feed on humans or animals, whichever one, vegan or whatever. And if they are trying to blend in with humans, anyone will tell you that if they are strange looking or standoffish or look different in any way, it's human nature to shy away from those people. Now, if a vampire wants to get close to their food, they're going to have to step it up a notch. They can't be pale and shun from the sun and things like that because their food walk about during the day. So wouldn't it be fair to say that if they can move their muscles, their brains work just fine and everything, why can't they have a heartbeat? Why can't they push the blood through their bodies to warm up their bodies so when they're shaking someone's hand, they're not ice cold? So that's one thing that makes my vampires probably unique and different from other ones.
That is interesting.
Yes. Now, what about the personalities of the vampires you've given in the books? What kind of personalities do they portray? Are they Are they like Interview to the Vampire type of thing, where they're very old world, or are they more, you know, I don't want to say like Twilight, or very new age, or what kind of vampires are they?
Well, you have the, I didn't go too much into old world type vampires, because this is going to be a series. This is going to be, right now, because I'm in the process of writing the second book, I'll probably have 3 or 4. So I didn't dump a whole bunch of stuff on my readers right away. I wanted to ease them in. In the first book, I'm trying to make it, here's your world with the trees and the birds and pretty, la-di-da-di-da. And then everything starts to change. And then when everything starts to change, it's kind of like a snowball. You know, you get into a certain chapter in the teens, and you just, it's just bam, 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 bam. Things are just happening. But I didn't go into the very old vampires. I went into your average run-of-the-mill vampire that is located in the area that Ivy, the main character, moves to. I have one vampire that's very sympathetic. She's, in a motherly way, tries to, you know, help, and she's not too keen on, you know, drinking people. So she's found her own unique way around that. And then she has a husband named Josh. And I'm sorry, Shane was the one I was talking about before. And then she has a husband named Josh. And not to say too much about Josh, because he wasn't, I mean, if you look for him, you get hints of what type of person or vampire he is. But he's very quiet, and you can tell he's got a darker side. And then you do have the darker ones that do show up and kind of shake Ivy's world a little bit. And those are more along the, you could say they were kind of old world, but not old, old world.
Now, in this, the female vampire in your story, now is she one of the main characters?
The main character is Ivy, and then the one I just spoke of was Shane. She is...
No, I wanted to know, do the vampires in your story, can they have children, can they eat, can they do certain things that normal humans would be able to do?
Well, also, along with the lines of, like, the heartbeat, of course vampires could, to blend in, eat, because they can move their stomach acids around in their digestive tract, of course. They don't have to. They absolutely do not have to. What was the other part of the question?
Can they have children?
No, they cannot. They can't have children. I didn't go into that. I know that one of the characters in there, she's a vampire, and she really wanted children, but there's no way physically right now that she can.
Interesting. Yeah, because I in all the books and movies, there really aren't many female vampires that are the main character.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's interesting how your book does that, because you really don't get to see, I don't know, female vampires in books, because it's always been a male vampire. And I think that's interesting.
I guess times are changing for the vampire. It's now an equal opportunity instead of a male dominated society.
Well, you know, I actually thought about it, you know, for a very long time, before I had any touchings on a computer or anything like that. I seriously thought personally that there was something wrong with me, because I had the deep emotions. I mean, when I was happy, and I've never been diagnosed with bipolar, okay? Let's just get that out there right now. I'm not bipolar. But I've always had, like, I see someone, you know, beating on a dog. I mean, I have a strong emotion to go over there and do something, you know. I don't like that. But then when I fall in love, I feel it deeply, like within my marrow. I mean, when I think that, you know, I'm talking to my daughter, whether it's, you know, Britt or, you know, anybody else, you know what I mean? It's, I deeply care for that person. And I always thought that I was, you know, weird or something like that. And then I go to writing my book, and I've had a few people read it, and they're like, wow, I've actually felt that way, or that's happened to me, or I can feel what you're going through. And it's, you know, for a female heroine, if that's what you want to call it, to be a vampire and show everybody that, hey, look, it's okay to feel what you're feeling. It's okay. You're not the only person out there that does.
Yeah, I think something that's changed about more modern interpretations of the vampire is they are real. They are substance. They aren't these distant tale monstrous figures like in Bram Stoker's, all mysterious. They're up in your face and emotional. And I've read your book, and they're cover to cover emotion. And
yes,
it's fantastic. It's alive. You bring life into the undead. That's kind of what I wanted it to be. I wanted it to, you know, the reader is reading this and, oh, this could be outside my door. You know, this could be, you know, on the outskirts of my town. This could be, and then once you start falling into, oh, wait a minute, there's a changeling. What is a changeling? And, you know, and then they start thinking, well, could this really be, you know, true? Could this really have some sort of truth behind it, you know?
What do you mean by changeling?
I wanted to stay away from changeling or shape, away from shapeshifter and,
oh,
you know, those types of words. I just use changeling. It's a shapeshifter. As a matter of fact, I was living in the South, and there's a lot of Indian tribes, which I could not get an audience with any of them. They're very hush-hush, and you drop the word, you know, shapeshifter, and they're like, oh, no, we're not going to talk to you about that. But what I did gather was shapeshifters are not, and you have to understand, I know a minute amount about shapeshifters. Vampires was my thing. But the shapeshifters weren't actually things that were, you know, would change shape and like in Twilight. What's his name? The boy dog.
Boy dog.
Jacob.
Jake,
boy dog. Jacob. I mean, they were shapeshifters. And how they were, you know, all these different things. But shapeshifters in this one Indian tribe, I can't remember, Kiamichi or Choctaw, or, I think it was Choctaw. I'm not for sure. But they actually... The mom would say to their kids, if you don't clean your room up, it wasn't like they were going to tell dad. They would say, I'm going to tell a shapeshifter. And believe me, that boy would go, you know, tuck and tail and go take care of his room because they were nothing to mess with. They were more of a, I use this term loosely, a soul eater type of, but they were nothing nice. From my understanding, I don't know too much. It's something I would like to read up on. But, you know, in my book, my changelings, they're not, you know, this fuzzy, lovey-dovey, you know, thing to sit down and cuddle up with. These were fierce, you know. My changelings can shift into any animal that they want, according to whatever is going on.
Now, which are you? Could you tell me which state in the South, or would that be giving too much information?
I'm sorry. What was that?
Could you tell me which state in the South, or that would be too much information?
Does the book stay in the South?
No. Which state? Which state?
Oh, I was in Southeast Oklahoma.
Oh, okay. Then that would make sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
Because of the Native Americans. Yeah, that would make sense.
Yes.
They have a similar legend around here that I just watched a documentary on the Rongaroo. I'll have to look up more information on it, but it was the similar thing of parents telling their children to, you know, do as you're told or the Rongaroo will get you.
Right.
And that was told to be either a shapeshifter or some kind of similar.
Right.
Yeah, we have something like that here. The Skinwalkers. Something like
you
that.
See, I really liked that. I loved Skinwalkers. I thought that had a wonderful ring to it. But they're not really Skinwalkers because it wouldn't fit them. Because in my book, when they shift, it's more, I didn't go into depth in the book because I think the writer knows like 10 times the amount of information that a reader will ever know. But in the book, I explain it as a shaking, as a blur. They turn into a blur because your eyes cannot focus enough to see the changeling when they shift.
Yeah, because I know that the Seminole Indians, you know, when they were in Florida, Seminoles were just a group of different Indian tribes that united, but they had some kind of, you know, legend like a skinwalker or something like that. You know, it's interesting. Something to do with like bears and panthers and stuff like that, and how they change into different animals and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. I have another animal in my book that I actually never heard of before. I couldn't think of a more glamorous name for them, so I just gave them the first one that kind of slipped out of my mouth that, you know, kept coming when I was trying to name these. It's actually a trans bearer. And it's actually the DNA of a bear is imprinted in their genes to where they can actually shift into bears. A polar bear or a grizzly bear or, you know, a black bear or the, you know, Asian bear, things like that.
That's
really interesting.
Think the bear from Golden Compass, the big warrior bears. These big protective bears.
Yes. He's one you can sit on your lap and just say, hey, read me a bedtime story.
That's something you don't really think of when you think of a grizzly bear.
Right. But, you know, I think when the readers actually start reading Ethan and reading his family dynamics and his core values and things like that, then you'll understand. I mean, there's two trans bearers in my book, and I think they both follow the same guidelines as like Papa Bear. Amy, would you say that?
I think so. They're very, very like that favorite uncle that you have that you can always go to for advice and protection. At least that's what it reminds me of.
Right.
And I think it's interesting how they have a very, even though it's like a similar type of change, they are markedly different in personality than the changelings. They have their own dynamic that between the two, especially that, you know, they don't always agree.
Right.
They're not the same.
I tried to make the readers understand that they are two separate types of creatures. With the shapeshifters in the book, you'll read that because of the shaking and the transformation that the changelings actually go through, they heat up their bodies. So they need to be, when they switch from a human to the animal form, it's okay because animals run hotter. It's okay for them to have a higher mm-hmm. body temperature than a person. But when they actually shift from their animal back into the person, they need to have some sort of water nearby to help cool them down. So in the South, it's not unheard of to have a pond behind your house or on your property somewhere. So that's why the changelings, live where they live, because, Gabby, she just shifts, jumps into the pond and comes out as a human. But with the transbearers, they actually can shift from person to bear. But the problem, the only thing the transbearers have as like a drawback is, say they're getting ready to throw down with something, and they actually pick a brown bear because, or a black bear because they're just patrolling their area, and then they come across something that can whoop a brown bear's butt, so they have to actually shift into a bigger bear. They have to go from that bear to a human, and then into the grizzly bear or the polar bear. They can't shift mm-hmm. from bear to bear. They have to go back to their human form.
Hmm. Now, in your book, do you have werewolves?
No, actually not in my first book. I don't have the werewolves yet.
Okay. Yeah. So do you plan in your book doing the traditional werewolf versus vampire scenario, or do you want to make it?
No, I actually have something completely, oh goodness. I have a soft spot for werewolves. My actual brother absolutely loves them. So I've been chit-chatting with him for about a year, and he has shown me a different side to what a werewolf could have. And, that's going to be in the next book. And believe me, it's completely different than anything you've ever seen. I've already discussed it with, my husband, Lou. Mm. I've got everything. It's going to be rather interesting. I want to see how the readers, take to it.
Hmm. Interesting.
I'm very excited about that. to see what direction that the werewolves will take. Because you see werewolves as in certain movies, like I think it's the Underworld series, that I've only seen it as they were once protectors of vampires. And then in like Twilight and a lot of other movies, and even Underworld, they're at odds with them. It's mm-hmm. like it'll be something different than that.
Yeah, they're completely, you can only rewrite and give new ideas so many times. Of course, it's going to blend between the two, but in my imagination, in what I see, is completely different than, I have the shift for a werewolf, completely different than what I've ever seen or ever read. I think me and Lou stayed up until, I think it was 2:30 in the morning, sitting there with, pictures pulled up from, a human skull and a wolf skull and looking at it from, like, the very beginnings of, you know, the shift and everything like that, to look at it and try to, like I said, I try to keep everything as close to Mother Nature as possible. So everything has to, it has to exist somehow. It has to be physically possible with a little bit of magic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like that about how you write it. It has to exist.
You make everything like you make everything realistic, but you try to keep it, you know, you make things possible, you know, things that could happen, basically.
Right. Mm. Like vampires drinking blood to survive, and that's all they do, and they're actually, you know, dead. Their bodies are dead, you know. That is the magic of what a vampire is. And then you throw your other ideas with the heartbeats and the different things. Like each person, each human has a gift, has something within themselves that they are really good at, whether it's, you know, drawing or things like that. And then if that person were to turn into a vampire, that gift would be amplified. So if you're really good at talking and you're really good at smooth talking or tap dancing or silver tonguing things, then when you become a vampire, that's when the bespelling comes in and all those little types of gifts that vampires would have, where they're all the same, but everyone has something that's one up above because of what they had as a human. Excuse me.
What did you get your ideas for vampires? Was it from different stories and legends, or is this something that you created?
I always had a problem with vampires not being able to go in the sun. And that would be something, I mean, I know Twilight just did that new thing where in the book, which a lot of people knock it because, you know, sparkling in the sun. I mean, but if you read the books, he explained it as reptilian skin that would shine in the light. It would show its true. I mean, if you remember the vampires from a long time ago, they could actually create images in your mind that were not there. Like, they could make themselves beautiful in front of, you know, if it was a female, she could make herself beautiful and sultry to a man when she was actually hideous, you know. So, but I could never understand why they couldn't be in the sun, you know. I could understand fire. I mean, I think everybody can understand why fire could kill a vampire. But I couldn't understand
the sun. Anything.
Pardon?
Yes. Yes, I think fire could kill anything.
Well, I took another page out of Mother Nature with that. If you take, you know, nocturnal animals, you've got, you know, a possum. A possum, it sleeps during the day, it stays out of the sunlight, everything like that, and it walks about at night. Now, that doesn't mean it can't walk during the day. That just means that its senses are going to be dulled and hurting because they're so acute, because they're used to not having much light at all. So why can't vampires be that way too? Everything is going to be heightened, and your sight and your smell and everything like that. And if you have the sun, it's going to amplify what you can already see in the dark. So
that brings me to my next question. What is your favorite vampire superpower? And were there any that you invented that you hadn't heard before?
My favorite what?
vampire superpower, like, you know, like the silver tongue or beach spelling or illusion or whatever?
My favorite one? Oh. My favorite one would have to be mind reading. Lestat had it. I think there's been a couple vampires throughout the genre that could read minds. I know Edward from Twilight could read minds. And if you're dealing with the top predator, which is the vampire, and for them to actually be able to read your mind, then, I mean, everything's a go. you could read their minds and just do whatever you wanted because you know what they're thinking.
You know what I would do is, you know, when someone always is like pick a number 1 through 10, I always wanted to see how many times they change their mind.
Which cup is the ball under?
Yeah, right?
That would be interesting to actually see somebody's thought pattern.
Oh my gosh, I was just talking about that with Will. I was like, you know what we should have? And you know those old telegraphs where they would spit out the paper because somebody mm-hmm. was typing on the other end? I said, wouldn't that be completely interesting if you could put probes in somebody's mind and you could have a ticker that would just tick out what everybody thinks, you know, what you're thinking? And Lou's like, I think we need to have like 10 reels for me at a time. It would be interesting.
Yeah, I watched the show on that. It was like Through the Wormhole with Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
And they were actually doing something on that. And they said, what would it be like if we could read your mind? And they actually were able to get an x-ray of someone's thoughts. And
oh,
it was
wow.
pretty cool. They actually got the words. They just used the electrical signals or something in the brain to create the image on the computer. And they got a word. It was pretty cool.
That's amazing.
When I was writing this book, some of the places I had to go when vampires are fighting, you know, and things like that, I probably would have went to jail. I don't know how many times because I'm trying to figure out how to kill this a certain way. If I had that.
It'll turn into the Minority Report movie, you know. Arrest them before the crime happens. Oh, I think my favorite vampire superpower is their strength. I think it would just be fun to be able to, you know, lift my own car if I had a flat tire. That would
right.
be fun.
But you see, that's the thing. We actually all have that power within us. If you actually, I know both of you have heard of the toddler that gets, you know, stuck under the car and the mother that weighs, you know, 90 to 100 pounds lifts the car 6 inches to help the child out from underneath the car. It's actually possible. Just, you know, it's not feasible. You can't do that because the amount of testosterone that has to release from the brain to make your muscles lift, you know, 3-4 times what they're supposed to. But we all have it within us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in rare life or death situations, we can do
right.
that.
Right.
It's been, I've heard many stories of people doing that.
So can your vampires like run fast? Like
Yeah.
Yes, they can.
Yes, they can.
Now, what enables that? The being able to control muscles.
Yes, if you're given full, pardon me, when the actual human body only uses a certain percentage of its strength, because it has the, what is the word? The preserving type of override. Like when you squeeze your hand or you go to lift something, you only use about, I've read anywhere like 45%. You only use 45% of your strength, because if you tear something or, you know, hurt yourself and things of that nature, you only use a small amount of your actual strength. So if you could heal yourself, if it wasn't a big deal to break a finger or, you know, twist your wrist, if it wasn't that big of a deal, then you could use 100% of your strength, which would make you, you know, 2 times stronger than what you really are. And given the vampire magic, then it's even more amplified.
Hmm. Yeah. And, you know, what were, like, some of these vampires that you created in your book? Do each of them have, like, individual powers, or is it all, mm-hmm. like, a collective
power? That's what I was saying to you earlier, was if you're a human, mm-hmm. and you have, you know, a certain gift, then it would be, you know, it would be more acute when you become a vampire. It would be amplified.
I see.
So if you were really good at, let's say, track and field or gymnastics, I mean, there you go. You can do a whole bunch of cartwheels. everyone has their own special gifts, of course. You have... you have Ivy, which she hasn't been dealt a very fair hand in life, but she's a survivor. She's got the one-track mind, and if she had to beg, steal, or borrow to, you know, get food in her mouth or take care of her daughter or whatever the situation is, she's a survivor. She has done what she had to do to get things done. So therefore, she's learned how to manipulate people into getting what she needs. Now, she doesn't go out and just manipulate guys out of their money or yachts or, you know, things like that. She's just surviving. But when Ivy gets, you know, into the vampire world, that starts to grow in and of itself.
How did Ivy become a vampire in the book? Did you want to share that or wait?
Well, I wanted my main character to, when in this short story that I was supposed to be writing like 2 pages of, I wanted to write a story about a vampire. And then I was thinking, okay, so we're going to need a little bit of backstory on how she got to be a vampire. And then I was like, well, instead of it making it right here, let's do a timeline. Okay, she's... in the city, she is being, things are not quite right in the city. She's working as a gas station attendant. She's, you know, feeling uncomfortable. Some things are going on that she's not quite okay with. So she moves to the country. She gets out of there and takes her daughter and moves to the country. She gets into the country setting. And lo and behold, you know, she gets there and she starts meeting all these people. And what was going on in the city has followed her to the country. So it's like, okay, and that's what it was. She was going to be a vampire, so, okay, we got to backtrack a little bit. So she gets changed here. Well, how did she get here? And it just kept going to where, okay, well, this is an entire book. And it just got bigger from there.
Hmm. So now she has a kid?
Yes.
Now, is the kid a vampire?
No.
No, but she is.
I'm sorry?
But she is, right?
Yes, Ivy gets turned into a vampire.
Oh, wow. So then what happens to her child?
What? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
So then if she's a vampire, then what happens to her child?
He has to read the book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you have to read the book because she's got this youngin, you know, and she's...
That's a whole other dynamic to the story.
Right. And then you've got... and then you've got the changelings thrown in there, and there's something very specific about the changelings, and it's, you know, like, what? Really? There's just so many things. It's not a... It's not just going to sit back and tell you about the landscape. There's all kinds of things. It was amazing how it all came out, too, because I was writing it. And the first, I don't know how many chapters it was. And then I'm sitting here saying, oh, okay, that's why that's going on. I felt insane for a very long time because these were actually, like, real people in my head. Like, okay, we're not going to say that during this chapter. We're going to wait for the next chapter. And I'm like, but I want to put it in there. And they're like, no. And I'm like, I'm insane. Yes, you are.
I often find, like, when I read about authors and where authors, like, that I grew up reading, like Anne Rice, and they talk about their characters. They talk about them like they're real, like they exist. Like she's like, oh, what is Lestat doing now? Is he out in San Francisco doing this or going here? And I think to myself, I'm like, what? And then you say that, that they're talking to you about what to put in what chapter, and it all makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it's like in my chapter, you know, Ethan has a history, of course, and Ethan and Ivy are talking. And I'm like, okay, so he's not going to get, I mean, he just knows this girl, this woman. He just met her, you know, not very long ago. And they're all sitting there and they're talking. And I'm like, okay, so where is this conversation going? And I'm typing it. And he starts, like, spilling his guts to her. And I'm like, what are you doing? And I erase it. And then I go about the rest of my day, you know, like any other person. And this screaming person in my head is, you need to sit down and write that again. I did say that. I'm like, I seriously, I'm certifiable. I need an I Love Me jacket right now. I'm insane. They actually do take on... take on their own persona. They're living, breathing people, and I know each and every one intimately.
Oh, yes. Now, do you think that... You know, I think that your idea, though, is interesting because I really have never heard a story like it before. But I think what's new about it is that it's different, and it takes the old ideas and it refreshes them into a new story that I think will be really good. And I look forward to reading it. Do you know when it will be on sale?
My publisher just contacted me the day before yesterday, and it's probably going to be, it's only an online sale for now. The end of next week or the following week, it will be out. You can buy it at Amazon.com. You can buy it at Barnes & Noble's. Those are the two places that are going to have it first. But other than that, you know, it'll be at any online bookstore that that you go and shop at.
I will have to look for it. And now, why The Ridge? Why that name?
Because of the location. It's she moves to the city, or from the city to the country, and it's this magnificent ridge, this mountain ridge that this guy Ethan lives at, and she's renting a house from him, and the ridge in and of itself is a world of its own. It's just everything is there. And it's just beautiful. I actually lived on a mountain, and the places in my book are actual places. You can actually go and visit.
So that would be the south where you lived.
Yes, it would the south where I lived. I actually name off towns and a certain lake and everything in it. It's an actual place.
Did you have any more questions for our guest, Amy? Anything you want to throw in there?
I don't know. I think we covered just about everything without giving away any spoilers.
I tried not to.
I honestly think I've read the book, all of it, and I honestly think it is one of the best stories I've ever read. Like, I didn't want to put it down. I had stuff I had to do. I had to put it down, but I didn't want to.
What are you talking about, Amy? I sent it to you on, like, Monday, and Wednesday night you're like, I don't care what you do. You better sit down and write more. But if anybody wants to keep up with updates or things like that, I have on Facebook, I have a page set up for it. It's called The Ridge, just T-H-E-R-I-D-G-E, and just type it in there. It's open to the public. I have my, if people want to follow on Twitter or Tumblr or anything like that, you can get updates. If you have any questions for me, once you get to reading the book and if you want to chit-chat about it, I'm, you know, just an enter key away. And, you know, I hope everybody likes it.
All right. Thank you so much, Eleanor, for coming on our show. And I look forward to reading your book, and I hope that you have a lot of success with it and that there are many more books to come after this.
I thank you for inviting me.
Yes,
thank you for coming on. All right, and that concludes our episode tonight, and I look forward to seeing all of you come on our next show next Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All right, thank you for coming on, guys. Enjoy the show tonight.
Thank you.
All right, you're welcome, guys. All right, I look forward to next Friday. I'll see you guys there then.
Good night,
bye-bye,
everyone.
Good night.